Welcome, whoever has come from some distant place, and especially welcome to Dravida Prabhu. Just a little appreciation. This is weather shock for Dravida Prabhu. I forget the word you used. Brisk. Bracing. Although he grew up in Long Island, he's been living in Southern California, and to come to Chicago during Christmas time is a shock. So, but he's happy to be here with the warmth of bhakti, and we're happy to have him with us. So thank you very much for coming. Huh? Yeah. That's why he dances a lot. That's one of the reasons. The schedule is here and outside, and it's Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's. We're observing a half-day fast. So those that wish, children, whoever else needs to take prasadam, they'll be prasadam. And otherwise, you can chant extra or something. Okay, so we're going to read this morning from Canto 11, Chapter 14, Text 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yatha Yathatma Parimrijyate Sau. Matpunya gatha shravanabhidhanai tata tata pashyati vastu sukshmam chakshur yatai vanjana samprayuktam yatha yathatma parimrijyate sau. Matpunya gatha shravanabhi dhanai tata tata pashati vastu sukshmam chakshur yatai vanjana samprayuktam. Yatha yatha, as much as. Atma, the spirit soul, the conscious entity, parimrijyate, is cleansed of material contamination. Asau, he, matpunyagata, the pious narrations of my glories, Shavana, by hearing, Abhidhanai, and by chanting, Tata, Tata, exactly in that proportion. Pashyati, he sees, Vastu, the absolute truth. Sukshmam, subtle, beyond material. Chakshuhu, the eyes. Yatha, just as. Eva, certainly. Anjana, with medical ointment. Samprayuktam, treated. Translation. When a diseased eye is treated with medical ointment, it gradually recovers its power to see. Similarly, as a conscious living entity cleanses himself of material contamination by hearing and chanting the pious narrations of my glories, he regains his ability to see me, the absolute truth, in my subtle spiritual form. I'm going to read a different translation. Same verse. From Bhakti Sandarbha, that's a writing of Jiva Goswami explaining, it's part of a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam and specifically the bhakti process. And I believe it's Bhanu Swami's translation of this verse. And here it goes. I like it. To the degree that the Atma becomes purified by hearing and chanting my glories, a person is able to perceive my real form and qualities and experience their sweetness. Just as the eye, when smeared with special ointment, is able to see finer objects like Krishna's form. It's a very fine object. Sukshmam. So here is the purport. The Lord is called Sukshmam because He is pure spiritual consciousness without any tinge of material energy. If one chants and hears the holy name and the glories of Krishna with great sincerity, there is immediately a transcendental effect. We can immediately see the spiritual world. And pastimes of the Lord. If we fully surrender to the process mentioned here, a blind person feels perpetual gratitude to a doctor who restores his sight. Similarly, we sing, Chakshu Dana Dilo Ye Janme Janme Prabhu Se. Or, the bona fide spiritual master, the representative of Lord Krishna, restores our spiritual sight, and thus he is our eternal Lord and Master. End of purport. So, this class is intended to do two things. Introduce the topic, like set the scene, chapter one, setting the scene for our time spent together during this holiday. And secondly, to honor Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, especially. And so I'm referring to a number of passages from his writings where he's addressing these same points, so that hearing, chanting, and remembering. The first of three of the nine processes of bhakti. On the schedule it says that I'd be speaking on that verse from the seventh canto Bhagavatam where Prahlad Maharaj identifies these nine processes to his beloved father, arch number one demon Hiranyakashipu, who didn't like it at all. But so I'll refer to it. I chose this particular verse because Jiva Goswami refers to it in a number of places. There are certain things in Jiva Goswami's writings, at least my little appreciation is, there are certain key verses that he considers really important. And so in different contexts, in different parts of the Sandarbhas, he refers to them again and again and again. Like one of those passages is, there's several verses where Vyasadev is describing his realization under the order of Narada Muni. He's instructed by Narada Muni to do two things. Fix your mind completely upon the personality of Godhead in trance. And then the second is, when you realize, then write Srimad Bhagavatam. Compose a literature that just illuminates that. So it's very important, because the whole of the Bhagavatam is what Vyasadeva experiences. In three or four verses, it describes what he experiences. So he refers to it again and again in different contexts. Again, it's a very important section. Very important section of the Bhagavatam. Canto 1, Chapter 7, beginning verses, early verses, 3 through 7 or something like that. So this verse is a verse he also refers to a number of places, not as many, but it's, there's an understanding that in the process of bhakti itself, that's very important for us to receive the important message. So that's why I selected the verse. Just something about the context of the verse. This is text 24 of chapter 14. This is Uddhava Gita. Krishna is explaining to Uddhava the process of yoga. And of course we know the uttama, or topmost yoga, is bhakti. So it's, he's describing ultimately bhakti, linking with Krishna through love and devotion and service. And two verses earlier is a verse where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructed by Ishwarapuri when he was beginning to chant under his instruction, and he started experiencing something very unusual. He would enter into ecstasy and begin crying and dancing. He wasn't like, hey, let's dance. He was moved by spontaneous ecstasy. The verse text 24. A devotee whose speech is sometimes choked up, whose heart melts, who cries continually and sometimes laughs, sometimes feels ashamed and cries out loudly and then dances. A devotee thus fixed in loving service to me purifies the entire universe. This isn't the exact same verse, but it's similar to a verse referred to by Ishwarapuri where, my dear son, Nimai Pandit, this experience, this is not, you're not, don't worry. Lord Chaitanya went to his spiritual master and said, I think I'm doing something wrong. These things are starting to happen. And he said, no, it's very good. Very good. Keep going. You're on the right track. You've achieved perfection. And then the next verse, so that's the bhava symptoms that come from one who chants properly. And then the next is another one of these yata. When you read verses that say yata, you can look a little further down and you'll find tata. It's a simile. As this, so that. Yata, tata. So, just as gold, when smelted in fire, gives up its impurities and returns to its pure, brilliant state. Similarly, the spirit soul, absorbed in the fire of bhakti yoga, is purified of all contamination caused by previous fruitive activities and returns to its original position of serving me in the spiritual world. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur indicates in his commentary, it's quoted here in this purport, that this means what Krishna is saying to Uddhava is one goes back home, back to Godhead, and there worships Krishna in his original spiritual body, which is compared to the original pure form of smelted gold. And then he says, you can't make that happen by soap and water. It's another process. So it's not something external, cosmetic, superficial, no good. Only in the fire of love of Godhead can one cleanse one's soul and send it back home, back to Godhead. So this is this like the smelting process of purifying gold, so all of the other impurities are removed and it's just gold. Similarly, the soul, to restore its natural condition, requires unmixed devotion, the smelting process. And then when that soul is just illumined into its natural brilliance, then one experiences these symptoms in the, as described in the previous verse. And that's the sadhya, and then there's the sadhana. There's the means to get there. And that's the hearing and chanting process. That's this verse. And one of the reasons I like the translation found in Bhakti Sandarbha is it's very clear, yata, as much as, or this translation is, to the degree that the Atma becomes purified. So the process is the same for each one of us. It's an equal opportunity organization. The process is the same for each of us. How we regard the process, and specifically how we regard the name and the process of, and the subject matters in addition to the name specifically in the verse, by hearing and chanting the pious narration of my glories. So there's the name and then the Harikatha, Nama and Harikatha. So I'm going to go a little bit into Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's exposition on this subject, and bear with me. First is from to the verse that most of us here are very familiar with, the nine processes of bhakti. When he was asked by, when Prahlad Maharaj was asked by his father, seated on his lap, affectionately patting his son Prahlad, saying, what's the best thing that you've learned in school? Well, rather than saying, what I learned in school is rubbish, Dad, but I did learn something very nice from Narada, he doesn't give that preamble. He just says, the best of all knowledge is the process of devotional service. Because that's something he learned from Narada. Then he describes or illuminates the nine processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. And then the second verse is combined. Iti pungsarpita Vishnau bhakti's chain nava lakshana, nine characteristics, kriyata bhagavatyadha tan madye ditam uttamam, the topmost. Aditam, topmost learning, the best of all things, devotional service. And then there are some qualifiers. It's devotional service that rendered Bhagavati Adha, directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or in the word for word in Prabhupada's Bhagavatam is completely, directly, it's okay. Directly or completely. Now I'm going to read from the purport. Prabhupada is quoting Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. He covers the first three, which is, well, I'm going to read the first three, which is what our theme is this weekend together. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following explanation of, in his Tatya, his teaching, with a capital T. The word Shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, entourage, and pastimes. Shravanam, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar authorized scriptures. So this is like a definition of what we're going to be exploring. That's the Shravanam part. Then the Kirtanam part. After orally receiving such messages, one should memorize these vibrations and repeat them. Kirtanam. Smaranam means trying to understand more and more about the Supreme Lord. What Bhaktisiddhanta writes. Smaranam, standard meaning or translation of that word is remembrance. Not the remembrance of the previous part where you memorize, not like that kind, but, you know, awakening of the consciousness of the soul, that kind. Remember, oh, Krishna is my master. Our eternal spiritual relationship with him progressively, yata yata atma, as much as to the degree that we become cleansed, that original consciousness becomes awakened. Smaranam. Just a little appreciation. I'll read again this Kirtanam part. After orally receiving such messages, one should memorize these vibrations and repeat them. There are certain devotees in our Hare Krishna movement today that are like really gifted in this little item, and we have one of them with us, and he's going to be leading us in exercises of Kirtanam, where we memorize, at least repeat, and then gradually enter into the message itself, not just like the sound, but the message itself, the meaning, or as Srila Prabhupada would say about the Govinda prayers, that famous little recording back in when he started the Hare Krishna movement, enter into the spirit of this hymn as a regular daily function. That was an instruction Prabhupada gave. Enter it, so not just the words, but because there's potency with the words, so that's nice, but then the spirit, let it move your spirit, and let the spirit move you, and enter into the spirit of the hymn, or the prayers, stotras. I'm just going to read two other things from this seventh canto purport, where Prabhupada writes, he explains the word adha in the Bhagavati adha. So the nine processes are meant for Bhagavati adha, which is the word adha means, quote, directly, unquote. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and then formally offer the results to Krishna. That is karmakanda. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. Got it? It's distinction. In other words, one should act for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu and not for the satisfaction of his own senses. So the other is act for the satisfaction of senses. Whoops, tell I to cleanse myself. I'll offer the result to Krishna. I don't want the entanglement, but I want the sense gratification. So do the sense gratification in a regulated way and then offer results to Krishna. Take a bath. This is directly Bhagavat Yada. The process of bhakti is meant to be done like that. And then, one more little paragraph, or part of a paragraph. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad says that the word bhakti means engagement in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not of anyone else. This Upanishad describes that bhakti is the offering of devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To perform devotional service, one should be relieved of the bodily conception of life. And then, aspirations to be happy to the elevation to the higher planetary, one should be relieved of the bodily conception of life and aspirations to be happy through elevation to the higher planetary system. In other words, work performed simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord without any desire for material benefits is called bhakti. So these nine processes, we're focusing on the first three of the nine processes, is to achieve these things just mentioned. Now it's a detail or embellishment is, commonly, the Upanishads, well, there's Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, and then Upasanakanda, or devotional service. Karmakanda mentioned is elevation to heavenly planets in worldly prosperity, but in a pious way. And beyond that is Gyanakanda. The Upanishads are very fond of the impersonal Brahman. And amongst the Upanishads, there are some most elevated. Gopal Tapani Upanishad is one of them. It's indicated very beautifully in Brihad Bhagavatamrita when the Upanishads are having some discussion about some topic, and the more elevated ones say, oh, this is really silly. Why are you wasting your time with this? The real message is just spoken here. Not elevation, not liberation. Devotional service to the Personality of Godhead. That's Adha, Bhagavat Yada. And nothing else. Nothing else. But it's the qualifier that Prabhupada has presented is these two things, you know, becoming freed from the bodily conception of life, and that the I conception and then the mind conception follows from the I and then mine. So now Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur saying the same thing in his inimitable fashion. This is taken from questions presented to Bhakti Siddhanta and then his response. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'm going to read part of it. Question. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, please tell us, according to Mahaprabhu, what is a human being's most important duty? So now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked that question by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he said, chanting. But what kind of chanting? So this is the what kind of chanting, just as what's here. First, we have to know who we are. Bhaktisiddhanta writes, then we will easily know what our duty is. Our duty is to worship the Supreme Lord and attain His mercy. This human form of life is the root of worship. Worship is not possible in other species of life. whether or not one accepts the fact, we are all the Supreme Lord's servants, and Krishna is an eternal master. Service to Krishna is our principal duty and our only duty. Forgetting the Lord, we become filled with false ego, identifying ourselves as enjoyers and masters. These designations are all mundane. Our natural spiritual propensities can become maddened by the attempt to enjoy matter, such as the definition of the mind. The mind is the perverted reflection of the soul, and as such, it is the enjoyer of matter. Taking advantage of the soul's dormant condition, the mind acts as landlord of the body and continues to enjoy the bodily senses. Paragraph. The mind cheats the soul. Being controlled by pious and impious reactions, it sometimes enjoys heavenly pleasures and sometimes suffers in hell. Thus the mind is the main enemy of the soul. And all scriptures recommend that we control the mind. Paragraph. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs, we are devotees of Krishna. We are Vaishnavas and therefore related to Krishna. We are neither Krishna nor Vishnu. Vishnu is the manifestation of Krishna's opulent form, and Krishna is Vishnu's form of sweetness. Actually, there's no difference between Krishna and Vishnu. As Krishna's servants, we have no engagement other than to serve him. As soon as we forget that, we fall into Maya. But by the mercy of the devotees, the knowledge of our relationship with the Lord is awakened, we will understand that we are eternal servants of Krishna and that all objects in this material world are meant for his service. Paragraph. All of us will have to become liberated. The state of liberation is nothing but remaining situated in one's constitutional position and cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably with all one's senses. And then he describes the qualitative way. This is just two paragraphs short, where he's expanding on the Shikshastakam 3 verse, Trinadapi Sunichena. Because, again, the question is, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what is the human being's most important duty? The duty has been identified not to actually enter into it or resonate with it or be qualified to act that way. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inaugurated the Sankirtan movement and delivered the fallen souls of this age. He is the most magnanimous personality. In the verse beginning Trinadapi, he taught that chanting Krishna's holy name is our only duty. Those who desire liberation and eternal happiness, as well as those who desire the treasure of love of God, should always chant the Lord's holy name. The Lord's name is not different from him. It is capable of delivering us from material existence and awarding us with love of Krishna. Paragraph. One should chant the holy name of Krishna in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw on the street. The attitude espoused in Trinadapi Sunichena destroys the misconception that we are God. In case somebody has a problem with that one. The humble attitude takes care of it. The chanter always thinks himself as a servant of the holy name and considers every object in this world as meant for Krishna's service and enjoyment. Last little paragraph. Krishna's holy names and deity forms are non-different from him. The holy name is Satchitananda, directly the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda. Listen to this. The holy name can speak. Anyone heard? The holy name is Krishna. The holy name can speak. The holy name is the super soul and omniscient. Krishna in his holy name appears in a pure heart before spiritual eyes on the service inclined tongue. in the service inclined ears, and in the senses engaged in satisfying his senses. It goes on. So I want to read one other little, just short part of another essay, short essay, on entitled Chanter of Kirtan, speaking again about the humility of this Trinadapi. So this is the how-to, this is a little bit of how to do our hearing and chanting and entering into Vishnu Smaranam. The chanter of Kirtan is always prepared to submit, to be trodden upon by thoughtless people. If any discomfort to himself will enable him to do good to his persecutors by chanting the truth in the most unambiguous manner, if he is unwilling or afraid of considerations of self-respect or personal discomfort to chant the kirtan under all circumstances, he is unfit to be a preacher of the absolute truth. Humility implies perfect submission to the truth, with a capital T, and no sympathy for untruth, period. A person who entertains any partiality for untruth is unfit to chant kirtan of Hari. Any clinging to untruth is opposed to the principles of humility born of absolute submission to the truth. So he's got a high bar. But his instruction is certainly to help his student or his hearer to come to the stage of perfect chanting, like, you know, getting the real fruit that chanting was intended to provide, or the gift that Lord Chaitanya wanted to give through chanting. Now, was he able to follow what he taught? As some of you, maybe most of you know, aside from his lifestyle, just some symptom of his commitment to chanting, he took a vow. It was like an event that took place in Puri where he was like doing exactly what he just described here with a very popular renunciate who started making up his own mantra and his own ideas of how to worship Krishna. And Bhaktisiddhanta let him have it. And because he was so popular, it was very risky. Those of you that live in India or spent time in Bengal or Orissa, you don't do that. Your life is at risk. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you just go to Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna. So he did. He took a vow to chant 1 billion names. 1 billion names. So let's do the math. He started in the year 1905, and he chanted not just 64 rounds a day, but 3 times 64 rounds a day, every day for 9 years. Think about it. It's like, that's Haridas Thakur's standard. And he did the Haridas Thakur standard. Some of you know this. I'm just saying it slowly because it's like, every time I think about it, it's mind-boggling. Every day. We have our retreats where we chant 64 rounds. And there was this whole preparation to do 64 rounds. And the next day people need like some recovery time. Bhaktisiddhanta was on a transcendental level. So his biography describes the first 3 years he spent just living, it's 4 years, in a cottage by the Yogpith, by the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he helped build the temple. Bhaktivinoda Thakur identified the location. He built a little cottage, and for 4 years, every day, 3 times 64 rounds every day. In the next 5 years, he shifted to the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, which is now, or it became the Chaitanya Mat, amongst the Gaudiya Mat places, and it became his headquarters. And where he did that little, it's now inside a stone building, but it was just a cottage. And you know the story. It got holes in it, because it was just a straw roof, and they said, can we fix the roof? He said, no, just use an umbrella. For another 5 years, 3 times 64 rounds every day. And, you know, during Chaturmasya, he observed, you see sometimes with a beard, because he strictly followed. He was incredible. There's a little wooden, gati, a little wooden platform that he sat on when he took prasad. And the program was, Indra tried to follow this too, I think he did. You lean over, and whatever you can eat without your hands, just with your mouth, and your belly gets squinched up. And then when you sit up once, that's it, no more. And it was, no salt, just rice and dal and a little water. Anyway, he strictly followed that. Every year for 9 years, along with his 3 times 60, and the other austerities that he followed. Transcendentalist. So he knew about the holy name. Otherwise, how is it possible? This Kirtaniya Sadahari part, one can do that if one has these qualities. Trinadapi, Sunichena, etc. In a deeply realized state. I'll skip. I was going to read his little commentary on the Shikshastakam number 3, but I want to go to, because of time, I'm going to go instead to a nice description. This is the last reference, Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, Bhakti Vikasha Maharaj's compilation, where there's a section on kirtan, and the description here is, in his early preaching phase, he chanted in kirtan, but later he had others chant, he just participated in the kirtan. And that's the program that he followed. And of course, taught it as again and again and again, the importance of japa and the importance of kirtan. But in addition to kirtan, there's the Harikatha message. So I'm going to read a little section. The kirtan culture, widespread in Bengal, had sprung from Lord Chaitanya's propagating Harer Naam Eva Kevalam. We know the verse. Kevalastakam, one of our favorites. Misunderstanding of which had led to underemphasis of the importance of Shravanam. Sometimes we find that. Some devotees, from some groups of devotees, they really like kirtan. And they don't chant japa. And as far as class is concerned, Haribol. So here's Bhaktisiddhanta. This is a misunderstanding. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur revealed that Harikatha is the Swarup Shakti of Harinam. What does Swarup Shakti mean? Internal potency. Listen. Just as Krishna is properly worshipped not alone, But with his Swarup Shakti, Sri Radha, recitation of Hari Nam is incomplete and improper unless accompanied by hearing Hari Katha. He stated, Bhaktisiddhanta, stated that wherever Hari Katha is spoken is a Tirtha, and that Hari Katha is the guardian of genuine sadhus in a world where everything that surrounds one is ready to become an enemy and attack the unprotected. It's our protection in a hostile place. It's the Swarup Shakti of Hari Nam. Moreover, he stressed that taste for and faith in Hari Katha is the very root of Hari Seva. And with sight, Hari Katha, he kevalam paramam shreya, or Hari Katha alone is the supremely beneficial activity. Here's how he said, there is no other method of well-being besides unceasingly and attentively hearing discourses about Hari from the highest devotee, who is the most beloved of Krishna. There is no other means for attaining service to the Absolute save the guided oral activity for catching the transcendental sound. Yeah, what a way of describing things. Because he's realized. He would quote Sanskrit verse, I do not consider bad a day covered with clouds, but one devoid of discussing the nectar of Krishna Katha. And there's pages, but it's really nice. I'd like to read it. Well, you know, writings from Harmonist. Here is Bhaktisiddhanta analyzing his own Hari Katha style, written in the Harmonist. The Acharya of the Gaudiya Math always speaks out the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is this which makes his language universally acceptable against the most cherished convictions of his audience. It is supremely thought-provoking. It always goes straight to the point, not to the expected, but to the point needed for the prevention of any misunderstanding. And then he wrote further, his own desire to engage in Hari Katha. When Brahma, speaking with four mouths, and Anantadev speaking with thousands of tongues, are unable to complete their discourses on Vaishnavism, how little can I, who am so insignificant, say of it? Yet, till my last day I may continue to hear Hari Katha from those who really serve Hari and chant about Vaishnav Dharma. While residing in this sphere, one must speak about and glorify Krishna to others 24 hours a day. Mahaprabhu taught that one should chant in all circumstances, even while asleep and eating. Or at least you can hear while eating. 14 or 15 years ago, I used to wonder how it could be possible to chant continuously, for it would get mixed up with association with materialistic people. But now, Krishna has sent me many friends who have given up all their varied engagements and have come to hear and speak about Krishna. My most worshipable Gurudev repeatedly stated that wherever there is no Krishna Katha is the world of Maya, and forbade me to go there. I then thought that whatever I do, I will bring about discussion of Krishna. And wherever such an opportunity may exist, I must go there. My job is to go door to door like a peon, reciting the instructions of my Gurudev to the entire human society. It will be good if all of you can extend this message to the whole world. It will be good if you can make Krishna known to all living entities. Always speak Krishna Katha. My sempiternal, what's that word mean? Sempiternal. Look it up. Wait a minute. Sempiternal. Of never-ending duration. My never-ending duration wish is that in unlimited ways you constantly remain preaching Krishna Katha, then all my desires will be fulfilled. In this illusory existence, he's writing in the Harmonist, in this illusory existence, especially in the present strife-torn age, the prevalence of discussing topics devoid of Krishna far outweighs that of Harikatha. Hence, it is the duty of devotees to preach topics of the limitless Supreme Lord up to the last moment of life. Then, just a little paragraph and we're done. In pursuance of this ideal, Srila Saraswati Thakur often spoke animatedly for hours. Formally or informally, to large gatherings or to merely one or two individuals, the Harmonist reported, his divine grace is accessible at all hours to persons of all conditions. He talked almost continuously during his stay at Allahabad to those who came to him. Apart from his regular lectures in various branches of the Gaudiya Math, he also spoke occasionally in other temples, in educational institutions, and public halls, and often in private homes, especially those of prominent and well-educated citizens. Sometimes he ranged over various topics, other times elaborating specific points in great detail. Something that I heard as a young devotee is Prabhupada once went to visit Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at the Chaitanya Math. And when he went to see him, there's a veranda in the house where he stayed, and 1 hour each day he'd pace up and down and present counter-arguments to Vaishnavism and smash them, and then counter-arguments to his arguments and smash them. And Prabhupada described, then he went into his room and he was speaking with someone, and Bhaktisiddhanta just went into this like intense description of something on a philosophical point. he was a lion, and unstoppable in his presenting exactly what he says one should do, Harikatha. Beyond the spirit, material conception, moved by the spirit of serving Mahaprabhu in this way, and on the one hand, his own protection. On the other hand, the protection of all those that came into his association. Like, you know, like this smelting process of gold. You became gold in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's association. So we're honoring him on, this is his disappearance day, yes? Because it was, right, yeah, okay, so he is guiding us, at least in this portion of our discussion on this topic, on what is the essence of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, and what it is and how to do it and the dedication with which we should carry it out. And it naturally follows if one hears from a personality like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then one will speak it. Prabhupada said like that about himself. my one qualification, to speak as I sat and listened. And as I expressed with in relation to Sri Brahma Samhita, when Prabhupada spoke to his disciples, they wanted to print it, and he said, just, you know, one or two pages at a time, because otherwise their brain will become puzzled. And then he went on to say, my brain was puzzled. I would sit and hear from my Guru Maharaj, and many times I wouldn't understand. My brain was puzzled. He repeated the phrase. But I knew just by staying and hearing, I was getting purified. And certainly, he exhibited that purity. By his own admission, he didn't always understand. Often his brain was puzzled. But the sound vibration acts in any case. As with the holy name, people may not know, but it acts. And so if somehow, even if the attitude is awful, like Shishupal, he became liberated because he chanted Krishna's name. Not just because he got his head chopped off with the chakra, because he was chanting Krishna's name. That's Narada's explanation in the seventh canto to Maharaj Yudhisthira. So what to speak if one chants attentively and favorably and with submission and like back, now back to this verse for this morning's class. To the degree that the Atma becomes purified by hearing and chanting my glories, a person is able to perceive my real form and qualities and experience their sweetness. Just as the eye, when smeared with special ointment, is able to see finer objects. Sukshma. Finer objects. Krishna's transcendental form and qualities. Hare Krishna. Any discussion or questions? Yes, Subal?
Guru Maharaj, I'm trying to properly understand that what you read of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in terms of chanting or Harinam and Krishna Katha, you explained that is the internal potency of chanting is this Krishna Katha. Now, is it that we have to engage in Krishna Katha or hear Krishna Katha?
Both.
Both.
Why one or the other?
Well, for the proper chanting.
Both. You start with hearing before you repeat it. You hear it and then you vibrate it. That's the process. But one naturally follows the other. It naturally follows the other. I mean, exactly as he's saying it. The other part is the service. Because hearing is a service and chanting is a service, but the Hari Seva, here's what he says, the taste for and faith in Hari Katha is the very root of Hari Seva. So
in order to engage in Harinam, or to be, you know, one have to basically accept the life of a preacher, right? Is that?
It leads to that. It leads to that. But starts somewhere else. So supposing we have a new person. We have some new persons here. So, it leads to that, but supposing somebody says, oh, I'm a new person. Okay. Engage in hearing. Enrich yourself with, from the right source, hearing. Hearing in kirtan and hearing harikata and hearing in kirtan and hearing harikata and hearing. It will lead to, you'll go, wow, come and join the kirtan and wow, this wonderful message of harikata. It's because, you know, when one becomes full, it comes out. It's not like a plan. Like, I'll say, okay, I gotta become, it just flows. One can plan it like that, but it just flows. Just flows. It's just very natural. And that's how Prabhupada engaged us in the beginning. I mean, it's how he started the Hare Krishna movement. And similarly, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta with his movement. Is that right? Dravida Prabhu.
In this regard, recently I read, and I think it was included, I don't know if you know about this, there was a nice booklet that Bhakti Marg Swami and I put out a few years ago on Harinam.
Oh yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
We only printed a few, it's available with PDF. And it was originally put together by Indrajumna Maharaj,
yes,
and Sri Prahlad.
Yes.
And we touched it up and we did it. So within there, I think it's in there, I read recently, you know, Prabhupada's program for Rath Yatra. Aside from the procession and everything, what should happen at the site? And of course, those of us who were around when Prabhupada was present, every Rath Yatra that he was present, he would always address the crowd. There would be tremendous chanting, and then there would be, you know, a talk, and more chanting, and whatever else happens in Rath Yatra. So, what he said was, just the program that I gave, you know, chanting, and then you speak for 20 minutes, then more chanting, and speak, in other words, what should happen on the stage, at the site, is not, we've tended to get away from that the simple chanting, and then Harikata, explaining what's going on, who is Krishna, what is it, you know, these are people, outside people also, who are just sitting there. And I think that, you know, the program is so simple, and when you see how Prabhupada set it up, you think of, you know, chanting. Anyone can chant, you know. But then you have to understand what's going on, and to really progress in devotion, you have to hear what is that I just experienced, right? And you read the Lilamrita, and you find that, you know, people would come for the chanting, and then Prabhupada would start speaking, and many people would get up and leave. You know, and these are the people who, you know, didn't really pursue it so well. I mean, they got tremendous benefit, don't get me wrong. But emphasizing this is so important, isn't, you know, because we tend, the tendency is, as you say, you know, ah, oh, I like the chanting, you know, ah, japa, oh, class, no, you know what I mean? And it becomes something that you don't understand. You're not getting the mercy, you know, full mercy, because you're not entering into the Sarup Shakti. You're not serving the holy name by hearing what it's all about. Anyway, there's a lot to be said about it, but it's fascinating. Hemanchu also mentioned this to me yesterday on the ride back when he drove me back, and I didn't know what he was talking about the internal Shakti and the holy name. But now it's fascinating. So there's a lot to be thought about here. Thank you.
Jai Jagannath, I knew you'd have something.
In today's verse, it seems to be speaking about a quantitative strength in hearing and chanting, which we don't always normally hear about. We hear about the importance of hearing and chanting, but we don't always hear in the quality of which the hearing and chanting should be done, as you were speaking today with the mood of humility and so on. But this verse also seems to be indicating a quantitative strength in hearing and chanting, you know, to the degree, to this degree. And so I was kind of wondering if you can, a topic that does come up quite often in our ashram situation here in Chicago is the, kind of like, I don't want to use the word balance, but between hearing and chanting and seva. You know, oftentimes seva is considered like we have health, sadhana, and then seva. So then hearing and chanting tends to, In our mindsets, although we know of the importance ontologically speaking, in terms of our practical application, it tends to get the like second position, so to speak, in terms of priority. It's like seva first, and then if there's time for hearing chanting of extra kind and so on, then you can, you know, one should engage in that. But the main thing is to be engaged in service, like of a very practical sort of nature and so on. But in the shastras, we hear like a very consistent message of a, like a quantitative strength in hearing chanting. So I was wondering if you can create maybe a balance in these ideas. It is certainly the case in our temple. It has come up quite often.
Jai Jagannath never has a controversial message. Never. It's a spiritual message. Well, three things. One is, I don't read what you just said from the verse, but I don't mind speaking about the question you're raising. As much as the spirit soul is cleansed of material contamination doesn't, to me, indicate necessarily a quantitative as much as. For you, it does. Yes, please clarify.
Mostly because of the second line of the verse, to the degree the soul is purified by the sadhana of hearing and chanting, you know, mapunyagata, the pious narrations of Krishna. So, you know, to the degree the soul is purified by this particular process. So that's why it reads to me in terms of a quantitative strength in hearing and chanting,
well,
for purifying the soul.
Here's something that I heard from Guru Kripa. Guru Kripa was very involved in helping to raise the funds for the Krishna Balaram temple. So he was like, he's invested in the Krishna Balaram temple being built. So he would come and bring, some money to Prabhupada for helping complete the construction. And they had, I forget what he said, the number of workers. It was either some large number of workers, something like a few hundred workers around the clock. They had to pay them all with all the materials. They had to keep the money coming in. And they asked Prabhupada, do you want the workers to stop at night because so you can sleep? And Prabhupada said, no, that is also kirtan. Just like get an understanding of the heart of our founder Acharya. So one can be engaged in the qualitative and quantitative activity just as you do when I've been with you and you're driving. You're having kirtan. Well, it's a solo, soft little kirtan, but you're not just humming, you're softly singing a melody. As soon as the conversation stops, I'm chanting japa and you're in kirtan. So, it's not like, Bhaktisiddhanta's reference here, where, how is it possible? Or here's another scriptural reference, because I just completed this study, where the last, after the Govindam prayers end in Sri Brahma Samhita, there's one verse followed by five verses. There's six verses. One verse is Govinda, who is the recipient of the prayers of Lord Brahma, these wonderful Govinda Stotra, says, paraphrasing, Brahma, I understand your heart, and you're feeling conflicted by these two things. This ecstatic experience of me in devotion to me and your affinity for doing worldly things. Your affinity for doing worldly things and it was building a universe. So we have different affinities for doing things. Not necessarily that one. But so Bhaktisiddhanta in his commentary says that there's an apparent contradiction between these two things, how if I continue going higher and higher in my bhakti, I may be negligent or, inattentive to my worldly duties, Or the other way, if I perform my worldly duties, I may be inattentive to my development of bhakti and maintaining my standard of bhakti. So his, you know, the different persons, so the five verses explain it. It's not a contradiction. It's they're joined together. So one may do some service in the kitchen or picking up dravida at the airport instead of studying and have in the kirtan or something like that. But that's as pure, the teaching is, it's as purifying as when it's properly joined. So, one other thing, just as a reference. You've probably read it here. I just heard it, you know, in the course of my Krishna conscious life, that I can't remember for sure the name. There was one disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta that joined, and he just liked chanting japa all day. You can probably give me the name. Akinchana Das Babaji. So the persons running the math, when Bhaktisiddhanta came to visit, they complained. All he wants to do is chant japa. And I forget exactly how he replied. Bhaktisiddhanta said, you could put an advertisement in the paper, invite people to come and all day long chant japa, and they won't be able to do it. You won't find somebody like this. It's not disgenuine, it's genuine. So let him just chant japa to someone that can do like that. But others can't do like that. So, now just one other reference, which is, before coming here to Chicago, I was in Naperville, and we were discussing Krishna's pastimes of killing the demons, and one of the demoniac tendencies is a person who imitates the position of a qualified person when they're not qualified. And one of the disqualifications is they encourage sense gratification in the name of spirituality, and there are people that do that. And another disqualification is one doesn't know that the qualification of the student and instructs them in ways that are not appropriate for the student. So what I'm saying here is each individual has a different requirement, as Akinchana Krishna Das had a unique qualification which the others didn't have. So he should be encouraged according to his qualification. And then others according to their qualification. So Prabhupada, the barometer of what the minimum requirement was according to our qualification. Now if someone has a greater qualification, fantastic. Then it should be adjusted accordingly. Or it's natural to do so. But then that person who has a greater qualification, like our Skype call the other day, one has to be considering the prabhus, the generic prabhus, and you know what example is being set, and how do we understand? So we have a mission. We're part of bringing people to Krishna consciousness. So we have to be sensitive to what the world can do and is inclined to do. So one size doesn't fit all. In other words, we're individual, and individual requirements need to be addressed and encouraged. So it's not just an ashram consideration, it's an individual consideration. That's my reply to your question. And naturally, if someone in the ashram is really hearing and chanting oriented and a little less service oriented, other types of service oriented, you know, the Hari Seva that comes from the Hari Nam and Hari Katha, a little less of the variegated. But you know, we're Lord Chaitanya's mission, so giving those activities to others in a creative fashion is our life. Look at Bhaktisiddhanta. You know, 3 times 64 rounds every day for 9 years, and then his whole life is just preaching. He gave himself sannyas and went out and preached. No, his tank was full. No, he wasn't running on empty. He wasn't depleted and weary and... We just received, this is another little comment, we just received from Hari Sori Prabhu a little something from some scientific journal where a person who was, a woman who was training nurses explained to them what happens when you get in the IC unit. And she said, you know, I'm going to tattoo on my forehead, or, you know, don't put any tubes in me. And, you know, it's just like she was describing the horrors of, so it was just like, Hari Sori put it out saying, Prabhupada was firm, like 10 exclamation points, don't let them do this to me. That was when he had his heart attack in New Jersey. And they wanted to put tubes in him and, you know, don't let them do this to me. And then during his departure. One devotee, I'll leave his name out, said he was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said it again and again and again, and, you know, right to the very end, Prabhupada was determined to speak Harikatha and go out glory, you know, like this, you know, the thing of going to Govardhan and just like give his life to giving to the world a message by his life and his words and his everything. Dedicate yourself to Krishna. So the mission is our life. It's what gives us the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we can get the gift that he wanted to give us. The mission, that seva, that's the mission, is, it just flows naturally. Just as, you know, one thing flows to the next thing, flows to the next thing. It's going to be there if we're doing our hearing and chanting properly. It's probably not satisfying you, but that's my answer. Anything else? Anything on the ladies' side? Okay.
Could I just speak
sure.
10 seconds on that question that Jayanagar said. I think the key is yatatidama parimujjate is the cleanse. In other words, to the degree that you're cleansed by this chanting my pious glories, to that degree you'll see me in my subtle form. But that cleansing has a qualitative effect also, a qualitative aspect. In other words, the hearing, certainly there's a quantitative, 16 rounds, there's no question. But not everyone is experiencing those 16 rounds the same. And so to the degree that you're cleansed in your hearing and chanting, which includes both the quantitative and the qualitative aspect, then you'll see me. So I think it's not one or the other. There's both elements there.
Well, Prabhupada certainly encouraged us just on the quantitative. He encouraged us to increase.
Yeah. At one point, quantity also includes quality. You can't chant 300,000 names without tasting something.
Yeah,
you know, there has to be that. So.
Okay, thank you all very much. To the Prabhupada Ki Jai.